What is up, junkies? It's Micah, and I know you're probably wondering where that awesome intro music is, and I promise that's coming up soon. But big news for the Pigskin Junkies, as we have gotten our first sponsor of the podcast. Now, I know you're probably wondering who it is, so thanks for asking. Let me tell you about them. Viva Tequila Seltzer is a refreshing and drinkable hard seltzer with 88 calories, zero carbs, zero sugar, and 4.5% alcohol by volume. Viva is the perfect drink for your post-game celebrations, as it was created with the active lifestyle in mind. Viva flavors their tequila seltzers because flavor is the spice of life and like their drinks with a kick, which is how they also like to live their lives. The flavors pair perfectly with their artisanal Blanco tequila for a subtle and refreshing drink. Viva's and the Pigskin Junkie's belief is to live long, live well, and live it up. Hashtag Viva Up. What's up, junkies? Welcome back in. We are back finally. I know it's been a while. 5 weeks, I think, has been since the last podcast. Obviously, a lot going on. Like I said, trying to figure this thing out. A hurricane happened. I was out of town for work. Anywho's, hope you guys haven't missed us too much. Joined again by my good friend, Brett Nierengarten. Brett, how we doing?
I feel great. I'm happy to be here. 5 weeks, you know, we had to wait till October, catch a little rhythm, and now we're good to go. Non-conference, NFL. Who wants to bet on week two NFL? It's impossible to figure out. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, like you said, getting into the meat of it, starting to feel it out. Teams really starting to separate each other. Was it October's for pretenders, November's for contenders?
So I you're believe starting, that's what they
to
say.
Starting to weed it out a little bit. Obviously, Brett and I don't need to talk about our college football programs anymore, since we're both about to be, most likely after this weekend, in the head coaching search. So that'll be exciting for both of us. And I do believe that both of our bold predictions from the start of the season got shot out of the sky pretty quick.
Yeah, a little too optimistic about the home teams there. But Nebraska tied for the lead in the Big Ten West. Barnburner versus Purdue this week. So, hey, could get to 3-1.
O'Connell coming in.
Who knows?
Yeah. So with that, we're going to keep it short. I'm going to keep it nice, compact. A lot of information right to you guys. We're going to bring back the beautiful gun to your head segment. Depending upon how many games Brett steals from that segment, it might just be Micah has the gun to his head. But with that being said, Brett, like you said, wedding season's out of the way. You know, football's here. It's time to lock in. Weather's starting to feel great outside. It was just at South Dakota State last weekend for the SDSU-USD game. Beautiful weather all around, leaves are changing, it's football time. You're looking at the slate this weekend. I got a text from you on Monday. You're feeling hot. What are we feeling hot about, my friend?
Well, I'm not feeling as hot in college because I just don't have the proof. I'm feeling hot in the NFL. I'm going to take a second and just brag about this. ESPN pick 'em, confidence pick 'em, 56-23 straight up, 48-32 against the spread. 99th percentile in both, folks. Now that I said that out loud, it's gonna go away. But I feel, you know, we've both been watching football a long time and watching football religiously a long time, and eventually college and NFL, whether or not people will admit it or actually use it to gamble, maybe it's dumb to actually use it to gamble, but you can sense kind of how a season works, you know, when teams are ready for letdowns, when all the money's going one place, when a spread looks fishy. So I've been relying more on my intuition than usual, which has been working, but that can only take you so far, so we'll see. But again, I just, you know, sometimes you see the board well. I just feel like I'm really seeing the board well, and the board is responding to how I feel football works. So I feel good about all that.
I love that. So, I mean, do you have, I guess, we got Thursday Night Football on tonight, which I think I'd rather watch paint dry on my wall than watch these two teams play football. But did you take a side for the Thursday night game?
Yeah, it's got to be, Commanders plus 5.5.
Yeah.
Too many points in that game. 75% of the, and here's how I pick all the games on ESPN for the most part. It's a lot of, because who are the squarest people in the world? The people betting no money in the ESPN week-to-week pool like I am. So obviously you're just going to find the biggest schmucks in the world, me included. I'm not being mean to people who use that because it's a fun way to track your picks and all that. But any game that has this two bad of teams, and if you have 75% of people still picking the Bears, that just that's Commanders to me through and through. Did I say plus five? That's plus a half. Did I say plus five and a half?
Because I think you said plus five and a half, but
yeah, it's plus a half, right?
Let me double check you here.
Yeah, double check that before I say anything on there. Because as soon as I said five and a half out loud the second time, I was like, that is not right.
I was going to say, because is it at home for them as well? Is it in Washington?
It's in Chicago.
In Chicago, okay. That just tells you how much I've been paying attention to this. It closed at Commanders minus one and a half. Consensus across the board.
Regardless, take it, all the money on Chicago. That's my feeling on that.
How do you feel, and this will be the last thing I ask before the end of a little NFL, but if you are Carson Wentz, I mean, how do you think that went over in the locker room on a short week where these guys are going to have to battle it out against Chicago on the road, and Ron Rivera just backs the bus up on him and just leaves it in park on his chest?
You know, if I'm Carson, it's not a secret to Carson Wentz that he's bad. You know, it's not a secret to Carson Wentz that he is. I heard someone describe, because there's like fun, bad football, and there's just depressing, bad football. And I saw someone on Twitter describe Carson Wentz as like the most depressing type of football to the nth degree. Like, he's not even like an experience. He's just, you want to shoot yourself every time you watch him play. And so, like, that's not a secret to Carson Wentz. He saw how the last 2 weeks in Indy went. He's seen how the first 5 weeks start. So I understand the, like, coach, you never throw your player under the bus. But Carson Wentz should respond the same way he was going to respond regardless, because he's going to be out of job in 2-3 weeks anyway, regardless of what his coach stands up and says at the press conference.
God, it's just so crazy. I mean, he was MVP when the Eagles went to the Super Bowl. Now, granted, he was out for the playoffs. But, like, remember how good he was.
The worst – I don't even think Ron Rivera was the worst coach throw anyone under the bus of the week. Did you see Brian Ferentz?
No.
When they asked Brian Ferentz if he's thinking about making a change in quarterback, someone asked him, like, what would be the downside to bringing in Alex Padilla? Because Alex Padilla played a little bit last year. Him and Spencer Petras have split time when Petras was hurt. Like, Padilla has starting experience. And Brian Ferentz goes, well, what would be the upside? So if you're the other quarterback, you're sitting there like, this guy gets us 9 points a game. I've started before here, and you're sitting, and you look at me and you go, well, there's no way we can win with the other guy. What are we doing here? So I would feel worse if I were him to be like, hey, the other guy has a negative 13 EPA, but I'm worse than him. I am worse than someone who actively hurts our team every time he touches the football. Because that's what Spencer Petras says.
That's fair. Well, again, we got to do a little quick shout out. This will be a transition into college football. Carson Wentz played football at
NDSU, the Bison.
The Bison. Very key to say it that way. Obviously, Dakota Marker this weekend, number one v number two. Big matchup. I mean, in Fargo, Brett, I feel like you kind of got to lean, as I sit here with my SDSU shirt on, feel like you kind of got to lean Bison in that one.
You know, you say that, but every SDSU, every time they feel like they've got like a top 10 team, they always kind of, they're like a little, you know what they are? They're a little A&M Bama. Where they'll, like, SDSU will always come in with a team that is a little worse on paper, and NDSU will always come in as a juggernaut. And sometimes they'll play them close, sometimes they'll lose, and sometimes they'll get them regardless of the 1-2 thing. So I think as a two, that might be, like, SDSU being that talented, I think might be the difference this year. They played in the playoffs last year, didn't they? Am I making that up? Or they both made the semifinals?
I think they both made the semis. NDSU and SDSU are on the opposite sides. SDSU lost to Montana State.
Yeah, because it was because NDSU played, one of them played Montana, the other played Montana State. So it was the Dakotas versus Montana. I mean, what a beautiful, in December.
Yeah.
Now that's FCS football right there. I think all those teams are still in the top four. But to answer your original question, I lean South Dakota State because even when they're not as good, they'll give NDSU a game still.
I love it. In the old Fargo Dome. So that's FCS talk this week on Pigskin Junkies. So we're going to dive into FBS now. Looking at the slate, you know, I've been cracking jokes here in Orlando. UCF, I think, plays two games on a Saturday the whole football season. Playing again tonight. Absolutely unbelievable.
Space U.
Yeah. Looking at the slate, you're going to hate me. And, you know, you talk about using your intuition. There's a team that everyone loves that has been a, you've used your word already, juggernaut. They've covered spreads. They're ranked. They are a former FCS team.
Oh, Okay, we're not on the same. I thought we were going the same direction there for a second. We almost had the same direction. I see where you're going now.
Georgia Southern plus 11.5 at home against everyone's favorite James Madison University. JMU is a very good team. I think they win the game. But the way this line has opened up, there's a lot, like you said, 78% of the bets coming, or excuse me, 65% of the bets coming in on JMU has bumped this line up a little bit, opened up at 10.5, so it gave a whole nother point. I think at home, Georgia Southern's 2-0 against the spread. Clay Helton, former USC head coach, now at Georgia Southern, also looking, I saw a thing for your Nebraska Cornhuskers, Brett, that teams that have beaten Nebraska this year are combined 1-11 after that game. Absolutely insane, Georgia Southern falling into that category. But I think this is a, James Madison wins, but it's a big letdown spot of, they're starting to get attention. You're in the top 25. Now the target's on your back. How do you play when you go from being the hunter to the hunted?
I think a lot of that too is when you look at how do upsets happen, especially like what you're describing, and not FCS, but a group of five school taking down the big group of five school. What you look for in that situation is guys who have just played a lot of football. And Kyle Van Treese for Georgia Southern, he started at Buffalo. He starts at Georgia Southern. He threw for 400 against Nebraska. But he's got something like 30 starts in his career across the MAC, across the Sun Belt. Now, we're not exactly talking murderer's row here. But the teams who typically win those games are those kind of guys. The types of teams with fifth, sixth-year seniors at quarterback, guys who have played a lot of football. I mean, that Georgia Southern team up and down, James Madison's probably the same way. I just know Georgia Southern because they played Nebraska.
Yeah.
but all those Sun Belt teams, they're all Georgia transfers and Tennessee transfer. I mean, it's all SEC washouts for whatever reason, or guys who go back to JUCO or things like that. So, I mean, Georgia Southern is plenty, plenty talented. And again, you have the Clay Helton aspect. Clay Helton wasn't cut out for USC. Clay Helton's still a pretty good football coach, and he's got those guys playing really, really hard. They run a really, really fast, up-tempo, clean offense there. So if there's any makings of an upset, I haven't looked into this one a ton, but I can see where you're going. The signs line up where you're going with this in terms of the type of quarterback and the type of coach you want against an inexperienced team, an inexperienced successful team, I'll say, because obviously very successful, but inexperienced in the fact that they are an FBS team for the first year and already experiencing such success.
Right.
I got one.
You got one? All right, let's hear it.
I thought my eyes were lighting up at this. I thought it's where you're going. You were talking new success team that everyone's talking about, Kansas.
Ooh.
Kansas playing Oklahoma this week. Oklahoma is -9 against Kansas. So you look at that. I talked about this in week one. I've been waiting for one. This has, why is this spread this way? Vegas knows something we don't, written all over it. Mm-hmm. And then you look into it. I'm a big SP Plus guy. Shout out Bill Connolly. I don't know what the formula means, but it's a great way to determine a true power rating of college football, of who would be favored on a neutral field, all that kind of stuff. And again, it's just his model, but it's a model that I really like because it's made me money before and it's proven to be true many times. And I also loved it last year when Nebraska was like 3-7, they'd still be like 34th at SP Plus ahead of like some ranked teams. I always thought that was funny. All that being said, Oklahoma number 18 in SP Plus. They're the best three loss team. That doesn't mean a ton, but A&M has three losses. Wisconsin has three losses. Iowa has three losses. There's not joke programs with three losses. Kansas, on the flip side, the worst one loss team other than UNC and Syracuse, who's actually undefeated. So all that being said, Oklahoma, if you just look at record and how they've played, has no business being favored by almost double digits in this game. But because they are, it makes you look at the advanced stuff. The advanced stuff tells you Oklahoma's better. And man, if we're just talking Brent Venables and Oklahoma against Kansas, all you got to do is beat Kansas to get a little mojo back. I think Oklahoma embarrasses Kansas and the backup quarterback this week. Because again, Kansas is doing all this too, I didn't even mention, with Jalen Daniels, who will not be playing this week or the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's I wanted to be a huge Kansas fan, and I was about to be all in last week, and they did cover. They did cover last week, but obviously, like you said, the injury, all of a sudden you just feel like the winds are out of the sails there. Another team that I'm watching closely. NC State sitting at +3.5. Obviously, Devin Leary kind of floating around in the ether of his health. That could be one of those that is a game-time decision, and everyone should keep their eye on it, because if you can get NC State, granted it's on the road, but if you can get them 3.5 with Leary playing quarterback against Syracuse. And like you said, Syracuse is no joke. They're a good program, but you got to like this NC State team coming off of a game that they're probably pretty pissed off they lost last week, that they should have won. They feel like they should have had that game. This is either, and it's always so hard to tell. And this, I know you're going to say, oh, well, obviously, Micah, you're one way or the other. But teams that are well-coached respond really well after games like that. And my fear is this can go one of two ways. I think this NC State team is very well-coached and very disciplined, where they will come out and they will play every single down. But you can kind of do a split. You can go, oh, well, we lost to Clemson. There goes our season, just in the toilet. Or you can come out and play. I do think NC State's even a team that could come out and cover 3.5 and win outright with their backup quarterback. I think they're that good, especially defensively. But that's another game I'll be watching up until kickoff. That one's a 3:30, so going to be feeling that out. Maybe an announcement on game day, and then everyone just goes flying to the gates.
That's on my list. Same pick, same everything. I agree with everything you said. I don't have to tell you because I just did the Syracuse SP Plus thing. But, I mean, so, like, every year there's a team like this, and it's great for Syracuse, but they're fool's gold. They're not that good. They're a middle-of-the-pack team in SP Plus. They're 71st in yards per play. NC State has probably the best defense in the ACC outside of Clemson. They've already played well against difficult teams this year. I mean, just playing Florida State and Clemson tough in any capacity is better than anything that Syracuse has done, better than anything Syracuse has proven. So I 100% agree. I don't think it matters who starts in quarterback. And again, NC State wins the game outright. And again, Syracuse falls by the way of Kansas, where we realize that they weren't that good to begin with. I actually saw the chatter, the people who were upset that College freaking game day was going to Neyland instead of the freaking Carrier Dome in Syracuse. So I looked, I was like, oh, Syracuse must be playing Clemson this week. Like, they have to be playing Clemson. That's the only way they're complaining. I am not kidding when I tell you, when I saw they were playing NC State, I burst out laughing because they honest to God thought that Syracuse NC State might be game day instead of Tennessee Alabama. It blew my mind. So that's just another reason to pick against Syracuse. I thought that was just a tad ridiculous, to be completely honest with you.
I would agree with
you. With all due respect.
Well, also, why wouldn't they, if they're not going to Neyland, they're going to our first gun to the head pick of the week, and that's Michigan Penn State at the Big House. Number 5 versus number 10, Michigan starting at, you know, spread at 7. Me personally, this one might end up on my actual card. I like Michigan at -7. I think Penn State falls under the fool's gold category.
This is a boring podcast if we agree on there, because that's definitely going on my card, because it's Michigan. It's Michigan -7. The defense this is something, again, where you talk about the ebbs and flows and just feeling a college football season, because you can say, hey, Syracuse hasn't played anybody. That's true. You can say, hey, Michigan hasn't played anybody. That's probably true. But how you look when you haven't played anybody makes a gigantic difference. Mm-hmm. And if you're Michigan, whose overall domination, their points per play margin, is number one in the country, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters who they're playing, but they're lining up everyone they put in front of them, and they're dominating everyone they put in front of them. And their defense is terrific, and J.J. McCarthy's terrific, and they run the ball probably better than anyone in the country, pound for pound. So you put all those things together, and you put them in a blender, and you take even the things that Penn State might do to win this game, like take the air out of the football. Well, it doesn't matter if you take the air out of the football, and now we got a duel between J.J. McCarthy and Sean Clifford, because I'm going with J.J. McCarthy and Michigan's running game every single time against Clifford and Nick Washington. Nick Singletary Washington?
Thanks.
I said it with confidence. I think it's Singletary.
I think so. I'd have to fact check myself, but yeah.
Penn State, terrific player. But again, I'm still taking Corum over that, and then I'm also taking the Michigan defense over that. So it feels like a no-brainer to me, where 7 feels like a lot, but 7 might feel like a lot in a 17-10, 20-10 type game for Michigan, and they still cover that way.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to Penn State people who listen on the podcast that your big road win against Auburn looks like a huge heaping pile of dog crap. And I apologize. My team sucks. And you did beat the snot out of us. Like Brett said, you beat a bad team convincingly. So thank you for that. You got my head coach fired, most likely. I appreciate you. Next on the card, we got 2 unreal 3:30 slot games this week. I'm going to go to the Big 12 first. TCU -4 taking on Oklahoma State. This one in Fort Worth.
This TCU defense is legit. Max Duggan is legit. Max Duggan is the ideal college football quarterback. He can run a little bit. He can throw a little bit. But he's just tough as nails. He's the type of guy who just like runs into linebackers and then gets up and gets right in their face.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of guys you want in your breakout type season. That's the kind of guy you want leading your team. Credit to Spencer Sanders and Oklahoma State. They can throw it all over the yard still. That hasn't changed. But I think this is a battle of toughness, battle of grit here. And this TCU team is what I live in Fort Worth. This TCU team has completely won me over. I was skeptical before, but their defense is amazing. Sonny Dykes has always gotten more out of less his entire career. Now he completely reshaped this roster in a year with the transfer portal, the same way he did at SMU. And this team is significantly better than they were last year. They're significantly better than they've been the last 3, 4, 5 years. And I don't think Oklahoma State's all that great. They were a little touch and go with Texas Tech there for a while. I know that's not the best way to judge things. But again, if Texas Tech's giving you all you can handle, TCU can score the same way that Texas Tech did. Their defense is much, much better, much more physical, not a Big 12 defense at all. So Oklahoma State's going to have their hands full, probably more than anyone they've played this year.
Yeah, dadgummit, Brett. You're making this hard on me, man. I have no trust in Derek Mason's defense at Oklahoma State, and I think that's the issue that has always been plaguing Oklahoma State. I want to believe that this team can do it. And just the fact that TCU, you know, they're the team. Again, you're getting the target on your back. TCU comes out, they stinking beat the snot out of Oklahoma. They win by 7 against KU. They're beating teams. They're beating good football teams. And I just so desperately, though, want Oklahoma State to do this, because I feel like normally I feel like 90% of the time it is Oklahoma State's in TCU's position right now. TCU is a good team. They're getting hot. Oklahoma State, for the first time in a long time under Gundy, because everyone is always focused on Gundy. They love him. I love him. I'm a big mullet guy. What can I say? I hate it, but so gun to my head, I'll take the 4 points. I'll take it. I'll take the 4 and I'll run. They're 3-2 against the spread this year. 2-0 on the road, though. 2-0 on the road. It's just one of those games that you can't. TCU's defense, like you've mentioned, is very, very stout. And the way Oklahoma State plays football is high risk, high reward, and you're going to get burned if you keep doing that. And that's my fear. And I don't think Derek Mason is a good enough defensive coach anymore to get you there. If you're Oklahoma State,
the winner of this game too has the curse of how the Big 12 schedules, where they like take their preseason poll, well, their estimated preseason poll when they make the schedule and when they assign the conference games, because everyone plays everyone, and make it so like the good teams have an easier start in the conference schedule. So like Oklahoma State, for example, still has to play Iowa State, still has to play Oklahoma, still has to play Texas. So their schedule is completely backloaded because they were supposed to be good. And the Big 12, because they didn't have a conference championship game for the longest time, likes to have those late season. Oh, look, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, number 7, number 9. We saw it last year with Oklahoma State, Baylor. Then they played again in the Big 12 championship game. So the winner of this game, most likely if Oklahoma State wins this game, I should say, they're going to have to deal with some very, very difficult scheduling moving forward to clear their path. Again, like I said, with still having to play Oklahoma, still having to play Texas, still having to play Iowa State, who they thought was going to be good. So that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out, where TCU already got Oklahoma, depending on what you think of Oklahoma. They didn't get the weird Big 12 schedule where it's like, here you go, murderer's row the rest of the year. We made it easy for you to start 8-0.
It's very true. It is very true. Yeah, Big 12 just loves to load the tail end. And then we've touched on the other 3:30 game going on at, was it, didn't used to be called the Carrier Dome? And then they changed the name. Is that what Syracuse?
That feels like it's a still the Carrier Dome thing, but I believe they did actually change the name of the Carrier Dome.
So stupid. Anywho, so we talked about that 3:30 game. Obviously, the big one on CBS, College Game Day, number 6 Tennessee taking on Alabama. Obviously, you've heard every meme that's out there these days. The last time Tennessee beat Alabama, they couldn't post on Instagram, they couldn't text somebody, or they couldn't iMessage somebody, they couldn't this, they couldn't that. They uploaded their pictures off of a SIM card to their MySpace page where Tom was their best friend, or in their top five, whatever the thing used to be. So, obviously, been a long time for Tennessee. At Neyland Stadium, place is going to be absolutely ballistic. And we still don't know if Young's playing. If he's not in, I feel like I got to take Tennessee +7. Gun to my head.
See, this is the first time the gun to the head's really being put to the head, because I've got a couple notes, not a ton, but obviously I knew we were going to talk about this. And I had written down Tennessee +7.5. But after you said that, the more I think about it, has Alabama ever been more right for the picking than they are this Saturday? No. Would you ever expect the time they're right for the picking for Nick Saban to lose that one of all games? Those are the ones he loses. His rare losses are the ones it's Ole Miss when they're 4-2.
Right.
6 years ago. It's A&M last year. He never loses the ones that he's right for the picking for. So all that being said, I'm changed. I have to take Alabama until they prove otherwise. I have to. I love Hendon Hooker. I have all these points about the Tennessee offense, about Heupel spreading you the entire width of the field. How's Alabama going to deal with that? And then I think about it. Is there anyone more equipped to deal with that than Alabama? No, I don't think there is. So I think I just have to, for no reason other than college football vibes, have to take Saban going in there, knowing what's at stake, and wanting nothing more than for Neyland Stadium just to go silent for 3 hours. You think Will Anderson likes what he's hearing this week? You think Will Anderson likes hearing that Alabama fell off? Absolutely not. All those, and they obviously take their cue from him. All of those Alabama defenders are crazy people. They're led by a crazy guy. Yep. And the craziest guy in college football is going to be madder than he's ever been. And he wakes up mad every morning because he thinks it's a disgrace that people step on the field with them every Saturday or whatever. So he doesn't give one shit about Tennessee. He doesn't care about the fans, the noise, anything. So I'm actually going complete opposite. I've convinced myself that Alabama wins this game going away.
And the more I look at this too, public is 72% of the bets and 64% of the money coming in on Tennessee. I also just cannot get myself to the window to bet on Alabama. I can't do it. I won't. I'll die on that hill. I'm sorry. So that's gun to my fair. Head, I'm going to die with integrity and self-respect. We don't have to talk too much about it, but Kentucky, number 22, back at home, Lexington taking on the favorite home dogs. Love this. Kentucky +4 at home against Mississippi State. Tough loss on the road last week against South Carolina. I don't know if anyone saw the stuff that Beamer was posting, but it was absolutely hysterical. I love the level of trolling that he committed to. I feel like this is a get-right spot for Kentucky. If I'm getting more than a field goal at home, this is a very defensively stout team. And for Mike Leach's offense, if you just keep them in front of you, you got a good chance. This Memphis beat Mississippi State last year. You think about Mike Leach's teams when he was at Washington State, they were always ranked in this area, and then they would lose a game that they weren't supposed to like Oregon State. You're going to have an off night when you try and just rip the duck all around the field. So I got Kentucky pissed off at home with points in the back pocket. Spank you very much, +4 Wildcats.
But you know, the only time that Mike Leach doesn't have letdowns is when he can has when he has a guy, because he's always got guys who can rip it. When he's got a guy who can really rip it. The all-time leader in completions in the SEC, Will Rogers, who would have thought, a Mississippi State guy, now leads in completions. That is the work of Mike Leach. And for that reason, after smacking Arkansas last week, my two favorite teams in the SEC, by the way, respectfully, Mississippi State and Arkansas, after smacking them in the battle of Brett Nierengarten's SEC West teams, I love what Mississippi State is doing. I thought the same thing. I thought this was just a Mike Leach team. I thought they were fool's gold, but they're not fool's gold. They are legit. They can sling it all over the yard. The defense is better than people think. I think this is Mike Leach's best team ever, maybe. Like, when has there been a better, maybe the Graham Harrell, Michael Crabtree 2007-8 year Texas Tech? That's probably the only one. I look at this Mississippi State team, and I now see a legit, I'm not going to say SEC title contender, because that means obviously beating Alabama, but a legit 11-1, 10-2 SEC team. Whereas before, I thought they were going to go by the way of Arkansas. They'd be 7-5, 8-4 eventually, go by the way of Kentucky, that kind of thing. But in the grand scheme of things, you've got Alabama, you've got Auburn, or not Auburn, sorry. You've got Alabama, you've got Georgia, you've got Tennessee. Every year there has to be five SEC teams that are really, really, really good, right? Just by the way it works out. Well, it's not going to be LSU this year. It's not going to be Florida, not going to be Arkansas, not going to be Kentucky. Process of elimination, we end up on Mississippi State and Ole Miss. I think this Mississippi State team's legit, and I think they maybe go into the Egg Bowl probably with one loss, I would say, to Alabama.
So you do raise a valid point. I do want to let you know, though, that they did draw out of the East this year, Georgia.
Oh, never mind then.
Yeah. So, and they are in Tuscaloosa. Losses. They're at Tuscaloosa next week. So a little bit of a look ahead spot.
That is just, that whole SEC thing is just downright cruel. You get your best team in years, and then you got to play Alabama and Georgia twice in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's all right. They get a nice recovery cupcake. They get Auburn in between the two, okay?
I mean, you just, like, as you're saying that, you're just like, yeah, sorry, but they have to play Georgia still. Yeah. Like, oh, shit.
Yep. Yeah, but the Egg Bowl still should be quite an exhilarating matchup. It's always entertaining, especially whenever somebody decides to lift a leg and pee.
I was going to say, it's entertaining when they both enter 4-7. So yeah, it's going to be entertaining when they're both 9-2, like exactly, they will be this year or whatever. I don't know what Ole Miss is. Maybe Ole Miss drew a Georgia too. Maybe they'll have four losses by then. Who knows?
And then last but not least, the Pac-12 coming into the mix, the 8 o'clock kick. USC traveling to Utah. The Utes are 3.5-point favorites at home.
This is a pride pick for me. I got to pick Utah based on what I said about them at the beginning of the year. But I'll also go pride pick. This is going to be the dumbest reason to pick a game this way, but it's gone to your head. I got pride pick, and I got those Southern California boys going to Utah.
Oh,
at night.
There it is.
All those flashy Jordan Addison and Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley, they're all Hollywood. They can throw it all over. But if they met a team who's going to pony up and push them around for four quarters and control the clock and play good defense and stay in their gaps and not blow coverages. So for the old man reason, I'm going Utah's fundamentals against the flash of Southern California. I'm taking the Utes.
I didn't know your dad hopped on the podcast. Yeah. That sounds like you just got off the phone with your old man. I could see him saying it to me right now in your living room when we were like 10.
Oh, like a defense, man, wins championships.
Yeah. So I'm going to go the opposite of you. I think for this type of game, you know, USC's had their road test early in the year. Obviously, Oregon State was ugly. So this is the first time going on the road since then. So there are two road games for the year. They beat the living snot out of Stanford, where everyone's like, you should be wary of Stanford. Uh-oh, they might get you here. Curb stopped them. Oregon State, everyone bought into the candy. They're like, all right. This game, yes, Utah's coming off of – they had a bad loss last week, if I remember correct. Who'd they lose to?
No, they won. Didn't they bounce back last week?
Did they win last week?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they won last week.
No, they lost to UCLA 42-32.
Oh, I lied.
Which UCLA, again, turning out to be pretty legit. That should actually be a good football game this year in the City of Angels. But – At the end of the day, I think USC's got more dogs. Gun to my head, I'm putting my money on some dogs, some boys that go out there and know how to play football. And that's Caleb Williams, if I can speak. Addison. They just got dudes that play. And I think Caleb Williams is a good leader. It's like when you watch Young go out there for Bama. And you just know that somehow, some way, this dude's going to find a way to win the football game. And that's how I feel about Caleb Williams. And therefore, I feel good going into the game with that. Utah, though, at home, I bet they're going to bust out the black jerseys. Salt Lake's going to be bumping. That's always a very dangerous environment. But I just think USC, this is a chance for them. Again, national stage. UCLA beat them last week. They know they got to come out here, and they got to get it done. And I just I don't know if Utah can score with them.
Well, last thing about that has nothing to do with the game. Utah always looks really good at night on ESPN. Like, I can picture this game and like the scene already. It's going to be like weirdly foggy, kind of. There's going to be stuff coming up off the field. And again, that's why you take Utah. The Southern California boys can't handle the cold. Someone give me a forecast. We're getting down to like 40 degrees in Utah. Come on. That'll make all the. I'll feel really good if we get below 40 degrees at any point during the game.
I gotta check. Make them
put sleeves on.
Let's see here. Predicted to be 66 degrees. Oh, might just be too just warm enough. Let's see here. Da 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 da. Game kicks off at what, 6 their time, so it'll be 69. It'll get into like, yeah, low 60s. That's fine.
Oh. We got to move this one back a month. It'd look much better. It'd look much better in a month.
Yeah.
My reasoning would make a lot more sense. But hey, if Utah wins this game, they can still – Pac-12 is still for the taking for them. So that's got to mean something. That's got to mean something to them too. Obviously, for the taking for USC, but Utah on their last leg after the loss to UCLA.
So. Must win. Yep.
Yes.
Dog backed into a corner. Talking about not looking good though. You know, you say Utah looks good at night in Salt Lake at home. You know who doesn't look good right now? The Chicago Bears wearing orange helmets with orange jerseys. That looks like doo-doo.
I actually don't even have the game on, so I can't tell you my
I just saw a picture of it, and I would – if I'm a Bears fan, I'm pretty pissed off if I saw
Bears
that.
Bears are – they got such class that you don't touch the Bears jerseys. No. Wear the orange jerseys, but don't touch the helmets.
Don't touch the helmet.
It's about the only thing. It's about the only thing they have going.
Exactly.
They got something going for them.
Well, with that, Brett, we'll wrap it up here. I know you did it on the last podcast, but if you want to plug again where you're at, where people can follow you along, where how rodeo is going, and then we'll – any closing comments, and then I'll sign us out.
We got some big news in rodeo. We're on the Cowboy Channel, as always, Pro Rodeo Brett on Twitter, Cowboy_Channel on Twitter, Cowboy Channel on Instagram and TikTok. Also, every Tuesday and Thursday on the Cowboy Channel, yours truly, Zero In segment. We break down the stats of rodeo, those exist, and I'm the one who puts them on television. I'm very excited about that. It's very fun. I basically get to like live out my dreams and play sportscaster, but it's real life, and the stats are about rodeo instead of football. But beats having a real job. So
it's true. It's hard for me to see you living out our dream, but it's okay. It's all right.
There's speaking of living out dreams, one of our rodeo guys, Shane Hanchy, shout out to him, he's a tie down roper. He was featured on Tex Eggs this week, did a little interview, an LSU guy.
There we go.
He's doing some podcast spots for college football now too. So we love to see that in the rodeo world, branching into the mainstream.
Absolutely. Tying it all into college football. It always comes back to the pigskin. Well, with that, junkies, we are going to wrap it up, get on out of here. I know Scott and I are still in communication about trying to get together for just a quick little speed pick, 10-minute on his deal. Obviously, follow along at pigskin_junkies on Twitter to get his picks weekly. We're tweeting those out. I'm tweeting along as well on Action Network picks. Brett, we'll have to get you on there and try and send those out there as well. But with that, junkies, we are out of here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Peace. Suck the taint juice.